Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Beth Ann Rossica, there's so much to talk about this morning as we think about DOGE, Department of Education, then Senator Mike Lee of Utah, Republican, introducing that ACE Act as far as proposing the legislation intended to bolster choice in education and fixing that, providing a lot. There's a lot to chew up. And then even last week, Beth Ann, when we saw the nation's report card on our schools here in Pennsylvania and across the nation. So I know I've really given you a big, broad umbrella to bite off there, but how are you?
I'm doing well, Dawn. Thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I made it in this morning. I was telling Dan it was kind of icy and dicey in the 4 a.m. hour, but I think the roads are getting safer as we warm up to the mid-40s today. But
yeah, I was just out and they were fine.
Yeah, so I'm glad to hear it because we're stuck in the studio once we get in.
Kids could have been in school. Come on.
I know, right?
I mean, yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly, but that's not the topic of today's subject. So,
yeah, we could talk about should they go flex, all these new names, flex learning and Zoom learning and all that good stuff. But where do you want to start? Because there's a lot. There was last week the nation's report card. Then we have also, my gosh, with DOGE looking at dismantling, basically, that's where we think they're going. Department of Education, the federal level of that. And then Senator Mike Lee introducing, and this is just proposed legislation as it makes its way through, but as far as bolstering educational choices and giving you instead of, what is it, 10 grand annually, you get 20K annually in those 529 accounts and all that good stuff. Where do you want to start?
Well, you know what? Let's start in Pennsylvania because, interestingly, nobody's really talking about the state assessment scores, you know, specific to Pennsylvania. So, you know, every year kids in grades 3 through 8 in Pennsylvania take what are called the PSSAs in English, language, arts, math, and in science. And for last year, for 2024, only 53% of our students are proficient in English, language, arts, and only 40% are proficient in math. Those are pretty abysmal numbers when you look at how much Pennsylvania spends per pupil. And there was actually a recent study done that looked at, you know, ranking states in terms of how well they do with funding education. And Pennsylvania funds education. They were, I think, like number 9th overall across all states in terms of how well they fund education. Now, the study did find that there were some inequities in terms of how much, you know, the distribution of funds not necessarily going to the highest need areas, but the overall dollar amount spent in Pennsylvania is more than sufficient to provide quality education for our kids. And when you look at these scores, they are just abysmal. And, you know, they're not even getting better. I mean, last year in 2023, they were pretty flat. They were at 53.7, and then they dropped to 53% this last year. And math went up, you know, a little bit. But, I mean, basically, we're not seeing any return for our investment. Shapiro had his budget address this week. You know, he was up there touting like he was a preacher talking for 90 minutes about all the wonderful things that are happening in Pennsylvania, the additional $523 million that's in his budget for education. And Dawn, I just have to say, money isn't going to fix this problem. It hasn't fixed it up to this point, and it's not going to fix it now. And people just don't seem to understand that.
And so what does it take as far as if it's not money? Because that's what we always hear. Well, here in Philadelphia, where I'm broadcasting from, where my residence is, I mean, Beth Ann, that's all we hear. Well, we need more money. That's the problem. Money, money, money.
Right. And I can tell you that for the most part, like the suburban districts in southeastern Pennsylvania, they certainly don't need more money. I mean, the amount of money that's being spent is utter insanity. And so I think that we need what we honestly need is almost like a DOGE approach to education, because we need to look at what we're spending money on in these school districts mm-hmm. and what are the outcomes that are being achieved as a result of every cent that's being spent. Josh Shapiro in his budget address talked about how he went to Allentown and kids now have new band instruments and new band uniforms and how wonderful that is, and all the new mental health services and all the new HVAC systems. Listen, I think all those things are great. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. But the primary purpose of public education is to teach our kids basic skills, reading, math, science. They need to learn how to critically think. If we can't do that, then the rest of it doesn't matter. I mean, band uniforms to me are like a nice thing to have. They're not a necessity. So why not hire more teachers? Why not lower the class size in a classroom? Why not hire more reading specialists to focus on getting these kids to the level of proficiency that they need to be at? I also think that you mentioned at your opening mm-hmm. school choice.
Yes.
We need to give kids options that aren't going to be successful in public school and who are stuck in these failing schools. Again, this is another area where Josh Shapiro has fallen flat on his face. He campaigned on supporting these Lifeline scholarships, which is money designated for kids stuck in failing schools, stuck in schools that have like a 0% proficiency rate. And so these kids would get money to go to a different school so that they're not stuck in this cycle of failure. He campaigned on that. He, even in his first year, he supported it. And now he has completely abandoned it. His 90-minute address had not one single word focused on school choice, nor did it have a single word focused on academic outcomes and the test scores for Pennsylvania.
Yeah, we're continuing the conversation with Beth Ann Rossica, who's an important education advocate, PhD, in fact, in education, local mom, who began to battle against some of the pandemic shutdowns, if you remember that time. So we've all kind of documented Beth Ann Rossica's journey as you've truly fought for kids, your own kids, everybody's kids, education, and to shine a light on the issue. So I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the new proposal. So even though it's not a proposal here in Pennsylvania, Senator Mike Leap has put it out there. They call it the ACE Act. A key provision would double the allowable level of tax exempt distributions on the, especially the 529 accounts. I'll mm-hmm. confess, this is my world right now, because thank God when our boys were babies, we put, you know, money away and really socked it away. So it helps pay for, you know, we have had to tap into it for high school, but you're only allowed to take the 10 grand a year as far as before college. So this would add the 20K, but it would also, you're still taxed on it if you use it. And so right. now that was a shocker to me. It's like, you're kidding me, right? They're going to tax you on it and it's for education. So they're trying to right. help out with the taxation of it. What do you make of the ACE Act? I know it's brand new and they just put it out there, but I didn't know if you had a take on it, Beth Ann.
Well, I think that any opportunity for parents to be able to save more money for education to be used, whether it's in K through 12 or whether it's in college, is really important. I mean, I think that parents have to have choices and they have to have options for their kids, whether they're stuck in a failing school or whether they're just learn differently and need a completely different environment. So I think that that's definitely a step in the right direction. And you know, we'll see where all of this goes. You know, I think it's going to be interesting. You mentioned about the U.S. Department of Education mm-hmm. and what might happen there. I mean, let's remind folks that the U.S. Department of Education, in terms of history, is a fairly newer mm-hmm. agency. It's not been around forever. Education has always been a state's issue. And, you know, the Department of Education was created with this idea to, you know, make sure that all the states were providing the correct funding and the correct oversight. And, you know, a lot of times the U.S. Department of Education issues unfunded mandates. So, you know, they put these rules and regulations in, and then there's not even any money to support it. So from my perspective, abolishing the Department of Education is 100% the right thing to do. And back to your point about, you know, using the saved monies that you have for to pay for college or for K through 12. It's interesting because I'm in the same situation that you are. I have a high school senior who will be going to college, and we were meeting with the financial aid office at his college to talk about, you know, loans and different things to, you know, fill in the gaps of where we might not have enough money. And they told me, they told us, and this was a shocker to me, that, you know, the U.S. Department of Education, the student loan program that they have, the one that, you know, Biden kept trying to forgive everybody's student loans. Mm-hmm. But that program was created to give parents options and students options that might not be able to get a private loan. And apparently, and I didn't know any of this until the financial aid person told me this, that generally those loans, the U.S. Department of Education caps the interest rate of those loans at 8%. And they told us that this year they raised it to 9%. So they've raised the interest rate to 9%. You can get private loans for lower than 8 and 9%. So, you know, what is the point of what the U.S. Department of Education is doing? It makes no sense. And that is the bulk. People don't even understand that, but the bulk of what the U.S. Department of Education is doing is not K through 12 schools. It's administering the student loan program.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, what a joke. And you could have, and you could have the, like you're saying, just use the private sector and offer tax incentives, right?
Right. I mean, exactly.
Boom, then you're
done. Exactly. Exactly.
I know.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I know that Trump is preparing that. He's preparing, you know, to do this executive order. I don't believe he's done it yet. We just hear that he is. This is a proposal to dismantle the Department of Education. I believe there's an element of this, obviously, with Congress and congressional approval. So we're waiting to see all the details, right?
Well, yeah. So Massey has proposed legislation to abolish the Department of Education, which really is the better place. Like all these executive orders, I mean, they're good for having an immediate impact. Mm-hmm. But like we saw with the last administration, you know, if the Republicans don't win, you know, 4 years from now, then a Democrat comes in and then that person can create executive orders overruling everything that Trump has done. So it really makes better sense to get all of these things through the legislature so that it will be much, much more difficult to overturn, you know, any of those changes. But I think that a combination approach where the president is issuing these executive orders and then the legislature is codifying it into law is really the best way to handle this. So it will be interesting to see because I think the biggest pushback of abolishing the U.S. Department of Education is going to come from the teachers unions. Mm-hmm. We've seen, you know, very clearly over the last 5 years how much influence the NEA and the AFT have had on the U.S. Department of Education. And I think they're going to feel the most threatened and do everything that they possibly can to prevent that from happening. But I think that it is a step in the right direction to eliminate a lot of the bureaucracy. I've talked to parents, particularly parents of special needs kids, who are very, very worried about the abolishing of the U.S. Department of Education because they're worried that the federal funds won't be there to support programs anymore. And I don't think we know what any of that's going to look like. Just because they abolish the Department of Education doesn't mean that the funding is going to go away. It could be moved to a different federal office to administer those programs. So I don't think we know yet what all of that looks like. But the other thing that I like to tell parents is that part of the reason that special ed services are so expensive is because of all the federal bureaucracy and all of the dotting I's and crossing T's that has to be done. Special education teachers spend more time on federally mandated and state mandated paperwork than they do on actually providing services to children. So if all of those regs go away, then there's going to free up a lot more time to actually have services with kids and not bureaucratic red tape.
Yeah, and you think, I was just looking up some of the stats on the Department of Education. They employ, that department employs 4,400 people about, and not quite $70 billion direct budget, $68 to $70 billion, depending on which source you look at. And so with that, do you think that money, as far as that money earmarked right now, $68 to $70 billion with a B, do you think that would be something that Congress would keep, would, you know what I mean, would pump back in the form of state grants and keep that money earmarked for education?
I mean, I think that there's got to be a balance to both. And I think that that's part of what, you know, DOGE has to take a look at. I don't think that all of that money needs to be pumped back into education. You know, I said this earlier, that money isn't the end-all, be-all answer to the way that we need to approach this issue. I actually have an article coming out next Monday about this specifically. I mean, when you look back over the COVID time with the COVID relief money, Pennsylvania got an initial grant of $500 million and then a subsequent grant of $1.2 billion. You know, we're talking close to $2 billion that Pennsylvania received in COVID relief money. And where did that money go? And what did it get used for? We saw no positive impact on test scores for kids or proficiency for kids. So if that money did nothing, why do we think that throwing more and more money at this problem will show anything? The article I have coming out Monday, it's interesting. I looked at 14 school districts and their starting teacher salary, because this is another issue. The Pennsylvania Union for Teachers is advocating that the starting salary for teachers should be $60,000 across the board in the state. And I did a comparison of test scores compared with starting teacher salary. And there's no correlation. There's no relationship between proficiency and starting teacher salary. Now, I'm not saying that teachers shouldn't be fairly compensated, because I'm a huge supporter of teachers. I'm just not a supporter of the teachers' union. And the garbage that teachers are required to do, the bureaucracy that they have to deal with, that takes away from actually teaching the skills that they need to teach, they are between a rock and a hard place. So my point is that money doesn't fix the problem. And so we have to address the fact that we need to be doing things differently. Our teacher preparation programs need to be diametrically changed. So many of the colleges and universities, teachers are not spending time learning how to teach, you know, pedagogy. They're not learning the process of how to teach reading effectively or teach writing effectively. The number of social justice in education courses that they have to take sometimes exceeds the pedagogical courses that they have to take. So this is, we need a big overhaul. And in education, to me, we need what DOGE is doing for the federal government. We need an overhaul of our education system. And what I'd love to see here in Pennsylvania is, let's put together an advisory board of people from different areas, people not in politics, but people who, from business areas, who know the skills that kids need to have to be successful, you know, people in education, a vast array of people to look at. Let's drill down on our test scores. Let's look at what's working. Let's look at what's not working. Let's fund some pilot programs to give school districts the flexibility to try some different things to see if we can accomplish getting these kids to a level of proficiency, because what we're currently doing in many of our school districts across the board is not working.
Beth Ann Rossica, our resident education expert, PhD, local mom. You had one, it's hard to believe, 1 month ago, you know, it was President Biden was the president. You had written, I know, it's like, man, the past 2.5 weeks have just been a whirlwind. But I'm looking back, I was looking back at some of your columns in Broad and Liberty, and it was 1 month ago today that you wrote about Pennsylvania and the Biden administration, how Biden had kind of abandoned, very quietly, you wrote, to force school districts where they would force, you know, the boys to compete against girls. But you said 25, we are among 25 states here in Pennsylvania who still, you know, force that to happen. And you retweeted Governor Shapiro, trans women are women, pass it on. What do you see happening in light of yesterday with Trump signing that and a new day in America? How do you, what do you see happening here? Is there, you know, between Pennsylvania, yeah. you know?
I think this is going to be a knockdown, drag out fight because I think that Pennsylvania, at least my perspective, has doubled down on this issue. So I had a follow-up article on that topic within the last 2 weeks, and I reached out. So the agency that has the regulation that the definition of sex, the protections for sex, also extend to protections for gender identity. And that agency is the Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission. So that agency in 2023 put together and enacted regulations, which, oh, by the way, don't have to go through the Pennsylvania legislature. They enacted rules that said that sex includes gender identity. So every time I write an article on this issue, I reach out to the PHRC and I ask them, you know, based on these new changes at the federal government, are you doing anything differently? And so when President Trump on his first day in office signed the executive order that there's only two sexes and that, you know, gender identity is not part of sex, I reached out to the PHRC and they said to me, in Pennsylvania, we continue to have protections regardless of what the federal government says.
So there it is.
So, yeah, so there it is. Now, apparently the Inquirer did an article and they reached out to Governor Shapiro's office. And Shapiro's office said that they're reviewing, you know, the information. Yeah. I really think this is going to come down to a legal battle. I think we're going to have to take this to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, just like we did with the illegal masking order from the health secretary, you know, many years ago.
Yes.
I think it's going to require the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to strike all of this down. But I do think it's going to be interesting because, you know, Josh Shapiro is caught between a rock and a hard place. You know, he's on record saying all of these things, but we all know that he has 2028 presidential aspirations. And we already know that 70% of Americans think that this is a ridiculous issue, that men should not be able to compete in women's sports. So it will be interesting to see if he is convinced politically that he needs to move in a different direction. But I think he's dug himself into a corner with these past tweets that I'm not really sure how he's going to be able to handle it. Maybe he'll push it off on our new Republican attorney general and, you know, make him the scapegoat. But we'll see. We'll see.
Stay tuned. Beth Ann Rossica, you're the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dawn. Have a great day. Take care.
Too.
Bye-bye.
You take care, too.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.